also are going. As we become better, for example, at treating cataracts in young children. As our immunization programs increase, we see a reduction in the number of children damaged by measles and rubella. But on the other hand, all European countries are seeing an increase in the number of children with multiple disabilities. Many of these children would have died some years ago, but medical treatment now keeps them alive, presenting great challenges to our education services. Our modern society produces new, modern diseases, and we must always be ready to adapt our teaching to new demands. Are you yet seeing here children born of parents who are drug addicts, several of whom can be visually impaired and have other disabilities? These changes in the children have far-reaching effects on our services. 20 years ago, in the special school for blind children where I worked, more than half of the pupils were totally blind. These were intelligent children who, with good teaching and support, could do well in their education. The school was only just beginning to work with children with additional disabilities, and it was learning how the introduction of such children can change the culture within the school. In those days, most of the staff, like me, felt more comfortable working with totally blind children. We knew Braille, we knew about mobility skills, and we saw our job as helping the pupils to compensate for their lack of vision. Some of the children had some vision, but we found it easier at times to pretend that they did not, since we had not been trained in how to work with low vision. We preferred not to consider how we might have to change our curriculum and our teaching approach in order to support these children with additional disabilities. I have kept in touch with that school over the years. If you visit it today, you will find almost no totally blind children. Very few such children are born now, at least very few who do not have multiple disabilities. Most blind children who have no additional disabilities now attend mainstream schools. So the children who still attend my old school are those who find mainstream school particularly difficult. There are children who have not mastered speech, children who have severe hearing loss as well as visual impairment, children with complicated medical conditions. There are a whole new set of specialists in the school now. Gone are the academic specialists. In have come the therapists, the communications experts, the people who understand how to use technology with visually impaired children. Change was not always easy. If you have been used to teaching bright, academic, blind children, it can be hard to adjust your style. Sometimes new staff were needed to replace the old guard of staff. But changes come, and as the needs of the children changed, and these changes have been mirrored in special schools across Europe. One of the most important areas of change has been in our understanding of low vision. 20 years ago, I remember teaching Braille to children who had enough vision to read the Braille by sight. Why did we do it? We had been told that some of the children might lose their vision, so it would be good for them to prepare. But this was not the reason at all. It was because we had been trained to teach Braille, and we had not been trained to teach reading using vision. Today, we know much more about magnification. We have low vision aids to make it easier to read print. We have special cameras to magnify the print. And we know more about contrast and about lighting. In the United Kingdom today, among 20,000 visually impaired children, only 850 use Braille. less than 5%. In my travels around Europe and Asia, though, I often still see children in special schools who are being taught Braille when they do not need it, and children who are in the schools not for academic reasons, but for social reasons. What about changes in technology? In those countries which can afford the new technologies, we have seen some dramatic changes. Access to information has been transformed. New computer systems now can offer visually impaired children access to the same amount of written information as sighted children. Lack of access to information used to be the single largest reason why some children needed special schools. In some countries, therefore, the technology revolution has been a significant factor in encouraging integration. But technology cannot replace good teaching. The best teaching I have observed has not been with computers, but with the human voice. And I deeply regret the compulsive urge of some schools who seem to believe that securing computers for their children is the most important target on earth, and that without computers, children cannot be taught. All our societies are becoming more computer-oriented. Our schools should keep up with this. So when most sighted children are using computers, then most visually impaired children should also. But the information revolution will touch us all. Later this week, I go on to Istanbul. I booked my hotel through internet. Over the next few years, as more and more of us gain access to the internet, any one of us will be able to have access to the best brains in the world. If I am teaching a child with a strange new condition that I have never met before, I will be able to find out what my colleagues in Germany, the USA, or Turkey have discovered about that condition. So often, the internet is used for trivial purposes. Perhaps we can use it to create a network of visual impairment specialists, breaking down the isolation that many of us can feel in our day-to-day work. Our society also is changing. Parents of visually impaired children have different expectations than they used to. Across Europe, parents now expect their child to have a full education, to be treated as an equal. In the United Kingdom, our government minister in charge of all the nation's education is totally blind himself. David Blunkett received his education first in a special school, but it did not prepare him in the way that he wanted. So he took himself off to his local college. He studied in the evenings, and he secured a place in university. Now, my greatest pleasure is that most of the time, people forget that he is blind. They like him or they hate him for what he does and says, not because of his disability. He provides a great example to many people. Of course, this can produce its own problems. If you are blind, it is hard to use blindness as an excuse not to be able to do a job. Look at David Blunkett, people say. I suspect some blind people curse the day when he became so successful. The idea of blind children being educated in mainstream schools has also become much more acceptable. Some people believe that all children should be educated in their local school as a point of principle. And there have been fierce ideological battles between those who feel that it is a human right to attend your local school and those who feel that the individual needs of the child may well mean that they should attend a special school. When the dust of the battle settles, we normally find people recognizing that many more visually impaired children can now be supported in their local school than was possible years ago. but that integration is not a cheap option. Indeed, it may be more expensive overall if all the support that a child needs is made available. It may still be the right thing for many children, though. Yet, as our education system as a whole becomes more willing to accept more severely disabled pupils, I believe that special schools will continue to have an important role for several generations to come. The greatest test is how to ensure that the expertise that develops in the special schools is shared with the education community as a whole. As you, here in Turkey, seek to offer educational opportunities to more and more visually impaired children, I hope you succeed in harnessing the skills and the enthusiasm of teachers wherever they work. And I hope you find a way of making the special schools work alongside the mainstream schools for the benefit of all the children. But sometimes the changes in our mainstream schools can work against the ideals of integration. Most of our governments have realized that they must give high priority to education if they are to see their economies grow. They demand more of the schools. They put ever greater pressure on teachers and on children to learn ever more. Teachers and schools face ever more rigorous tests of their effectiveness. If you cannot produce a good set of examination results, you have failed. This is hardly the ideal environment in which to ask schools to accept disabled children. We need to find new ways of rewarding schools who are prepared to accept visually impaired children. We need to become ever better at showing that with the right support, most of these children can compete equally alongside their sighted friends. Despite these difficulties, I believe the trend towards greater integration is irreversible. In countries where not every visually impaired child currently receives an education, I am sure that the most effective way of increasing the coverage will be through developing integration schemes. In poor areas where schooling is not universal, many families will not want their child to leave home to attend a special school. And if they do so, it will be difficult for such a child to return to their village when their education is completed. With suitable low vision aids and specialist advice, and with encouragement to the mainstream schools to help them develop a positive attitude, a large number of children can successfully enter their local school. I also believe that the trend towards universal education now is irreversible. Throughout Europe, it has taken a long time for the most multiply disabled children to be given access to schools. And in many countries, still, such children are kept at home or in special institutions, a source of shame to their families, and I believe a source of shame to their societies who cannot offer them the dignity of a school place. Many of the most multiply disabled children in our countries have a visual impairment. Expertise has developed enormously over recent years in how to enable these children to learn to live fulfilling lives. But developing the services that these children need will always place a strain on the education services of any country. We can also see changes in what is expected to be the outcome of the education we offer to visually impaired children. We live in a tough, competitive world, and it is important that visually impaired children will have a chance to compete when they have finished their education. It used to be the case that only certain jobs were considered to be open to visually impaired people. If you were very able and could reach university, then you could perhaps study law or philosophy. Many would become teachers, although often only being allowed to teach other blind children in their turn. Music or physiotherapy provided good jobs for many others. Failing these, there was telephony or crafts. Some of these professions are still here. But increasingly, there is an expectation that visually impaired people can compete in the same work market as sighted people. New jobs are opening up, particularly with the new information technology, but other old professions are closing down. In the modern world, employees need to be more flexible, better trained, able to move around and adapt to new jobs. The task of preparing our pupils for the world of work has become ever more complicated. I see welcome signs across Europe of some creative thinking, of a rejection of the limited job opportunities that used to be on offer, and of a determination that visually impaired people should be able to compete equally. More of the closed doors are being opened. The aeroplane that brought me here was powered by a Rolls-Royce engine. One of the engineers that designs the engines for Rolls-Royce is one of my ex-pupils. I am totally confident in her abilities. Mind you, I am glad the pilot was not blind. And what about the World Cup in France? I am told that nearly half the referees there are blind. So we see change all around us. The children are changing. Our understanding, especially of low vision, is developing. We are using new technologies. Parents are expecting more of us. We are seeking to support more children in mainstream schools. We are seeking to offer education to all children, however severely disabled. We are changing our expectations of what our pupils will achieve. Too much change places great demands upon us. It will require an atmosphere of mutual support so that we can learn from each other as yet another change is forced upon us. Let this conference provide us with a new set of ideas for the years ahead and a new set of friends to call upon when the next set of changes comes upon us. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Yes. Efendim Cafer Barkuş Bey, lütfen. Mehmet Bey, siz de nasıl olsa konuşacaksınız.
Günaydın efendim. Hepinizi saygıyla selamlarım. Size bir sizin affınızı dileyeceğim. Ben notlarımı İngilizce hazırladığım için İngilizce devam edeceğim. Herhalde sorular kısmına gelince Türkçe cevap vermeye çalışırım. It's a pleasure to be here with all of you. I want to congratulate my friends at the Six Dot Society for diligently working and putting this conference together. I want to express my deep appreciation for the ICVEI European Division for their support, and congratulations to the Ministries of Education and Health. It's wonderful, the Department of Special Education. I would not have expected less support from my friends at the Gazi University. They have done wonderful, all the distinguished educators in this effort already. I was asked to speak about the situation of the visually impaired children in the United States. In US, all children who are handicapped are entitled for some services from birth until age 22. These services are from 0 to 3 years called early intervention services, 3 to 5 years preschool, and 5 to 22 or the completion of high school is called education services or schooling. The early intervention services begin as soon as the child has been identified by the doctors as handicapped, usually soon after birth. I'm going to stop from the text. I use the word handicap in general, but whenever I use the word blind or visually impaired, I mean the same thing. I know there are distinctions made in different places, but it's easier to talk without being too picky. Okay, back to the text. Generally, the hospitals notify the appropriate agencies which provide early intervention services. Early intervention specialists, or social workers, we call them in the U.S., contact the parents and develop a plan of services specific to the child's needs. Typically, it includes parent counseling, providing therapies, and stimulation to the child. The frequency may vary from weekly meetings to monthly visits. It is also possible for the parents or a caregiver to take a child to a regularly scheduled program with other children and their families. These meetings may be held from again, weekly to monthly basis. Parents are advised about the present and future resources available for their children. They're taught how to advocate for such services. The preschool services begin at about the age 3 and usually at age 5 when the child starts kindergarten. This program includes all the typical preschool services activities as well as providing some special services as needed. These services might include orientation and mobility, vision stimulation, language and communication development, and other needed therapies and services. The amount of services is related to the needs of each child, availability of the specialist, or ability of the parents to advocate for their children. During the preschool, the specialist, the school authorities, and the parents together plan for each child's schooling. It's perhaps a good time to explain that in the United States, the educational plan of a visually impaired child is done with the participation and agreement of the representatives from the local school authorities, State Department of Education or similar agency, various teachers and therapists as needed, and the child and or parents or guardians. Children are allowed to attend their own individualized education plan as early as about age 14. Without the permission of the parents, these services cannot begin or continue. Typically, schooling begins from kindergarten and lasts through the completion of high school or other educational programs as appropriate until the visually impaired students reach age 22. This age limit is not because something happens to a person's ability to learn at that age, but rather due to the laws of the United States, which say that funding for educational services must end at age 22. If additional services are needed, some adult service agency assumes the responsibility for it under the requirements for rehabilitation services. The laws make it compulsory for a visually impaired child to receive adequate education. But the rehabilitation laws are not as clear. Most blind or visually impaired children, as Mr. Enos said, for Europe, at present attend classes at their community schools along with seeing children, same in the United States. However, there are still a number of schools for the blind which offer both residential and day programs. In addition, there are special classrooms, sometimes called resource rooms, set up within some public schools just for visually impaired children. Students receive most of their education in these classes at the beginning. As their skills increase, they are slowly mainstreamed or integrated into other classes with the seeing children. They can come back to the special class teacher for vision-related instruction or services as needed. Regardless of where a visually impaired student is placed, he is entitled to receive an appropriate education in accordance with the law and as outlined in his individualized education plan. This IEP in the United States is like the most powerful weapon a parent can carry along. The school authorities are responsible to provide the specialist teachers and therapists as well as the needed special equipment. It's not always possible for every town to have all the required specialists on their staff. Therefore, sometimes several towns pay for one specialist to serve all their visually impaired children. And as you can imagine, sometimes a child will not receive the needed service because there is no specialist available. This is one of the challenges of the integrated education system. Depending on the size, wealth, and determination of each community, the education of blind children are either successful or not successful. You might be interested to know that the blind students integrated in public schools are not exempt from any subjects because of their visual impairments. Blind or visually impaired students must attend physical education classes. They must take mathematics classes, science classes, and they must take examinations. However, the teachers are encouraged to be flexible and creative when teaching blind students. They are encouraged to find new methods or strategies to teach a concept which may seem more visual. Perhaps the chemistry teacher is satisfied if the blind child is able to demonstrate his understanding of a chemical reaction by using the data obtained by visual assistance from someone else. After all, it is the comprehension of the concepts that is important. While a visually impaired student is attending public school, which does not have the resource room, that special class we talked about, his special needs related services are provided by a specialist teacher, sometimes called itinerant teacher or vision teacher. His books are obtained from a local resource center which coordinates the provision of these materials. Braille books are obtained from the major Braille printing houses. Often the large print books are done locally by using sophisticated copying machines which can enlarge the print according to the child's visual situation. other equipment are provided by the state agencies, usually on loan to a student for the duration of his education. Specialist teachers, such as the vision teacher, which means a teacher who handles both Braille students and low vision students. That's the new approach. 20 years ago, we were doing the same things as Mr. Annals. And orientation and mobility teachers are university trained and state certified. All specialist teachers first must earn their ordinary school teachers' qualifications. Finally, in the United States, the cost of education of the blind or visually impaired child is paid for by the local school system, which in turn is refunded partially by the state and which is refunded by the federal government. This funding covers the basic required educational services outlined in each visually impaired student's individualized education plan. In addition, many states assist blind students with their university education, which includes tuition, books and supplies. There are a number of other private agencies which assist blind individuals with their studying as well as with assistance in their daily living. These might be volunteer readers or volunteers to go shopping or assist with participation in community recreational programs. I'm going to stop from the text for a minute. When I was thinking of my notes, I thought of only the education, and then I've run into a lot of my old-time friends who were asking me questions about the rehabilitation, what happens to the adults. I will not say much except when a child is about 15, 16, all these agencies, the school system, the parents, the State Department of Special Education, they form a team called the transitional team, and they start planning for this child's future. What will happen when he becomes 22? Will he go to college? If so, what is the most likely field to study? What skills would he need? What resources does he need to cultivate now? Or will this child seek a job, or will he need supported employment? All these things are hopefully planned during the remaining 6-7 years. Okay. I've tried to give you a brief sketch of the situation of blind individuals' education in the United States. However, I must point out that the conditions there are far less than perfect. Don't let them hear. Unemployment among the persons who are legally blind is over 70%. There are many reasons for this to list here now, but I'd be glad to answer questions. The positive side of the situation is that the stereotyping of blind persons is diminishing. More and more Americans are seeing and believing that with the right kind of education, blindness alone is no longer a barrier for an individual to do what he wants to do or to be what he wants to be. Thank you.